Please stay tuned for important disclosure information at the conclusion of this podcast.
Hello and welcome to European Securitization Insights podcast from Morningstar DBRS. My name is Madhasa Chaudhry, and I have the privilege of leading the European Structured Finance research team out of our London office. Through this series, we bring you expert perspectives on the latest trends, research, and developments shaping the securitization and cover bond markets. In today's episode, we turn our attention to the world of cover bonds. We'll discuss what they are, how they differ from standard securitizations, and why they remain such an important funding tool in European capital markets. We'll also take a closer look at Morningstar DBRS's global methodology for rating and monitoring cover bonds, which is out for request for comments. Through our discussion, we will highlight some key changes under consideration and the reasons behind those changes. Finally, we will touch on some of the broader trends we are observing across the cover bond landscape. I'm delighted to be joined by Thomas Rodriguez, Senior Vice President and a Sector Lead in our European RMBS and Cover Bond Ratings team. Thomas, thank you for being with us today. So just to set the scene, Thomas, what are cover bonds and why are they so important?
Okay, so a covered bond is mainly a debt security collateralized by a pool of assets, which is issued by a financial institution. Covered bonds are typically regulated by a specific legal framework, and they are considered a very safe product because they benefit from what we call dual recourse. So they have recourse first to the issuer, and in case the issuer defaults, covered bond holders have recourse to the pool of assets backing the covered bond. And also, if the value of the cover pool is not sufficient to cover the debt, covered bond holders will have a recourse to the insolvency state of the issuer, ranking same level as unsecured creditors. Cover pool assets are typically mortgage loans, but can also be public sector loans or even other types of loans, but that's uncommon. And there are three different structures to issue covered bonds, which differ depending on the country. We have the on-balance sheet structure, where the cover bonds are issued from the balance sheet of the bank, which originates the loans, and the cover pool remains with the originator, but is ring-fenced for cover bond holders in case of issuer's default. We have the other side, which is the specialist cover bond issuer structure, where the originator establishes a subsidiary with a limited purpose of issuing the cover bonds. And in this case, the cover pool assets are transferred to the cover bond issuer, which will typically benefit from liquidity lines, guarantees, and so on. And finally, we have a mixed case, which is the guarantor structure, where the originator issues the covered bonds, but the cover pool assets are typically in an SPV. And here the SPV acts as guarantor to the covered bonds, agreeing to repay bondholders in case of issuer's insolvency. You have also asked about why covered bonds are important. Well, I mean, covered bonds have a regulatory treatment that is quite favorable, mainly in Europe, okay? They are exempt from bail-in in case of resolution of the issuer. They are considered high-quality assets for the LCR, the liquidity coverage ratio. They are assigned low risk weight in the capital risk regulation, low risk factor in Solvency II. They have low haircuts for ECB repo transactions. I mean, they are very interesting for investors and also for issuers. And that's the reason why there are more than 3 trillion euro outstanding cover bonds. But I would say that around 90% of them are in Europe, no? While the rest is in other countries, in Canada, Australia, and other countries.
So Thomas, why certain jurisdictions issue cover bonds while in the US this market doesn't exist?
I said before, I was saying that they are mostly in Europe. We have these active jurisdictions like Canada. We have France, Germany, the Nordics here in Europe. We have some other countries like Spain, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Italy. I mean, more countries, not with more than 100 billion euro outstanding covered bonds. When you mentioned the US, well, in the past, there were two entities that issued covered bonds, but it was around 20 years ago, something like that. It was WaMu and Bank of America, with not too much success. But in the end, I mean, there is no covered bond specific legal framework. And what is more important, there is no covered bond culture there in the US, no? Covered bonds are mainly a European product. We need to remember that covered bonds were originated for the first time in Europe in the 18th century, so more than 250 years ago. And we have seen no defaults in covered bonds since then. So I would say that this is about really culture, no, of covered bonds, if we compare Europe and the US.
So very standardized, tested through the times, a product which existed in Europe. And methodologies have existed for some time now. So can you give us a brief intro to Morningstar DBRS's methodology of rating cover bonds? And as I mentioned in the intro, that now is out for request for comment. What has really changed in our methodology, and what kind of encouraged those changes to be made now?
I would go relatively very briefly, no, to our method, through our methodology. So to our to get to our covered bond rating, we have four steps, after which we obtain the rating. Of course, not before having a committee decision. And first step is to determine the what we call covered bond attachment point, which is the point of departure of our covered bond rating. We need to remember that covered bond holders have this first recourse to the issuer. So we need to know the probability of the entity failing to repay covered bonds. In case of countries subject to the Banking Recovery and Resolution Directive, which is the case of the European Union, we can use what we call the critical obligations rating of the issuer as the point of departure, because this one measures the risk of default of particular obligations at some banks that have a higher probability of being excluded from bail-in and remaining in a continuing bank in case of resolution of the bank than other senior unsecured obligations. And this is the case of covered bonds in the end. Once we have determined the covered bond attachment point, we have the second step, which is to assess the liquidity and structuring framework, what we call the LSF assessment. This LSF assessment involves the evaluation of the level of the linkage between the issuer and the covered bonds. We need to analyze the covered bond legislation, the covered bond structure, many other features to get this assessment. And once done, we can associate an LSF matrix to the program. And we have five LSF matrices, which are very strong, adequate, average, and modest. And each matrix associates a likelihood of timely payment to the covered bonds based on the covered bond attachment point and the cover pool grade assessment, which is the third step. And for this one, for this third step, the cover pool grade assessment, we need to analyze the quality of the cover pool. And then we need to run our cash flow engine, where we include the credit analysis of the cover pool, the expected cash flows from assets and liabilities, the expected proceeds from the sale of all or part of the portfolio in case of issuer default, and other many other stresses. And in this case, of course, the higher the overcollateralization level, the better the cover pool grade assessment. So once we have this cover bond attachment point in step one and the cover pool grade assessment in step three, we can obtain the LSFL, which is the legal structuring framework likelihood, by crossing them in the matrix that we have obtained in step two. This LSFL expresses the likelihood that covered bond holders will be repaid according to the terms of their investment. And finally, we have step four, where in consideration of the senior secure position of the covered bond holders, we may grant an uplift of up to two notches from the LSFL if the analysis of the cover pool shows that it would provide substantial support following a default of the covered bonds. But now also we have a request for comment in place. And well, the reason why we are proposing changes to the methodology now is that we have been rating, I mean, covered bonds for many years, and every year we have more data to analyze and to consider, of course, no? So a couple of changes that we have proposed have to do with this additional data that we have been gathering over years, mainly on market spreads and interest rates. And the analysis of this data supports these changes that we are proposing. And also, I mean, the covered bond market has experienced a very important development in the latest years, mainly in the European Union, with the transposition of the European directive across all European countries. And finally, I mean, in the latest 5 years, we have seen covered bonds developing in some countries, no? So we are proposing to add them to our methodology so that we are able to analyze covered bonds in these countries as well. To briefly mention these changes, the first two proposed changes have to do with the way that we estimate the value of the assets when we model an asset liquidation after issuer's default. We are proposing to update the market value spreads and the interest rate curve for the discount factors. Both are used to calculate the net present value of the cover pool. So for calculating the market value spreads, we proposed to depart from the historical covered bond spreads instead of the RMS spreads that we are currently using. And this means an important reduction to the current ones. We have also added the market value spread for 8 more countries, so we can also analyze covered bonds there as well. And the other element mentioned was the interest rate curve. And in this case, we propose to derive an interest rate curve to calculate the net present value of the forecast cash flows from the assets by shifting the forward curve at any point in time by a magnitude that depends on the time horizon and the credit rating. The other updates have to do with the modeling of the issuer default in our cash flow engine. And for European covered bond programs, we want to consider the credit rating of the European Union when assigning the LSF assessment for a covered bond program. And last one, we have added an appendix where we explain how to use our methodology to rate covered bond swap payments if needed.
Thank you, Thomas, for providing a very brief summary. And obviously, the further details will be and are available on our website, along with the methodology, which is out for request for comment. One additional question on this topic. All these changes, proposed changes, what kind of impact will they have on the current ratings?
Yeah, the impact of these changes is mainly positive for rated covered bond programs. The reduction of the market value spreads that we were mentioning, as well as the development of the interest rate curve for the modeling of the asset liquidation, they typically have a positive impact. And these are the main changes proposed. The other changes can also be positive, but usually have a minor impact. So in terms of ratings, we expect a positive impact of 1 to 2 notches on less than 5 covered bond programs. But we also expect lower OC levels, over collateralization levels, consistent with our ratings in many covered bond programs.
Thank you, Thomas. Now, moving on to a general update on the market. So, given a very well-established covered bond market, as you alluded to earlier, have we seen any changes recently which might have had a negative or a positive impact or even a credit neutral impact on the covered bond programs?
Well, if you mean, for example, in terms of regulation, the most impactful change we have recently seen is, of course, the transposition of the European covered bond directive in all the jurisdictions in the European Union and the European Economic Area. Thanks to this implementation, I mean, there has been a harmonization of the rules governing covered bonds across Europe, no? But in the end, this happened around 3-4 years ago, and we are now focused on other matters that may not have this impact on covered bond ratings, but have to do with the equivalence regime for third country covered bond issuers and investors, and the possibility of introducing European secured notes. We are waiting for the European Commission and the Parliament, the Council, and all of them to go on through these ones, no? We think that these ones are quite interesting. The aim of the third country equivalence regime is to harmonize policies and improve regulatory treatment across all countries so that the European Union to treat non-European covered bonds as if they were equivalent to the European Union covered bonds in terms of course regulatory treatment. And this is very important for issuers and investors in Australia, Singapore, New Zealand, South Korea, but also Canada or the UK, although at least those two are accepted for ECB collateral purpose as they are part of the G10. No? And regarding European secured notes, these would be covered bonds that allow for the financing of asset types different than the traditional covered bond collateral types, no, which were mortgage loans or public sector loans. And this, for example, would include SME loans. No?
These are the regulatory changes, but have you seen any changes on the covered bond structures themselves?
Yeah, maybe the main recent change that we should highlight here is the convergence to a soft bullet model across all the countries. This means that covered bonds benefit from a maturity extension, which is typically 12 months. And this extra period is quite beneficial because in case of issuer's default, it allows the administrator to have more time to decide on the strategy to repay the covered bonds that are about to mature. It's true that most covered bond programs already benefit from these features, but there are some countries like Sweden or Spain where covered bonds are typically hard bullet, which means that they have no extension. And in these countries, covered bond programs are tending to a soft bullet structure, which is positive from a rating perspective. But on the other hand, we are seeing also the gradual disappearance of the conditional pass-through programs, which from a rating perspective are typically very safe. These programs turn into a kind of RMBS when issuer defaults, no? And its payment can extend for a long period of several years. But again, I mean, although we could see conditional pass-through programs in some countries like the Netherlands or Portugal, Italy, some other countries, this really represent around, I would say, 1%, 2% of the total outstanding covered bonds. And issuers are converting them to soft bullet programs.
So to wrap it up, Thomas, any conclusive remarks what you may expect in the next, say, 6 to 12 months in the covered bond market? I know it's a very well-established market and changes are not just overall of the structures, but small tweaks here and there. So any conclusive remarks from your side?
Yeah, no, as you have said, I mean, covered bonds are a very safe product, but it's true that they are quite dependent on the ratings of the issuers, ratings of the sovereigns, the quality of the covered pools, the evolution of the interest rates. So although we expect stability in the next 12 months, we always need to be aware of potential changes that might indirectly affect covered bonds. Also to mention maybe in terms of sustainable issuance, which is quite also important in the covered bond market, because covered bond issuers are quite active when we talk about issuing sustainable covered bonds. They typically mean around 10% of the placed benchmark issuances every year. And 5 years ago, the annual issued amount rounded 5 billion euro, and now it has increased to around 20 billion euro every year. No, so this is another thing that we need to be aware of, that in the end, we expect that the sector of the covered bond market in terms of ESG issuance or sustainable issuance will continue growing as well in the next 12 months.
That brings us to the end of today's episode, and I'd like to thank my colleague Thomas for sharing his insights into covered bonds. And thank you to our listeners as well for joining us. We hope you found this discussion valuable, and we look forward to bringing you more perspectives on the securitization and covered bond markets in the future episodes of European Securitization Insights.
By downloading and listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to the Morningstar DBIS disclaimer and legal terms and conditions found at dbis.morningstar.com/about/disclaimer and dbis.morningstar.com/about/terms and conditions, including that the information provided is not investment, financial or other advice. Morningstar DBIS will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information. Please note that the content of this podcast is intended for European audiences only.